My message today is the very obviously titled Wabi Sabi. That was a joke. I suspect very few of us know what Wabi Sabi is at this point. We'll get there. When reading this particular set of scripture, we allow the Great Commission to go forth and make disciples of all nations. We allow the Great Commission to get in the way of the people in the story. Now, if you stop and think about it, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, the Great Commission ultimately is about people. Make disciples of all nations, of all peoples. But the verse itself distracts us a bit from paying attention to what is really happening to the people in the verses. Now, there is one key word that sort of gives away what is possibly going on inside of the people in this story. Anybody have an idea of which of the words that Ann read might be the key word? Okay, I didn't figure you would. I'll get there. Just let me add this first, though. Matthew tends to be very, very careful with his words. And there is one word in these scriptures, early on in the text, that, well, it's not needed if you simply want to focus on the Great Commission. The word is 11. Now, the 11 disciples went to Galilee. Not 12. 11. You see, this text would have read just fine if Matthew's author had said, now the disciples went to Galilee. But he didn't. He said 11. Not only is it unnecessary if you're just going to focus on the Great Commission, but it's also the very first time that Matthew's author has referred to them as the 11 disciples. That number should stop us dead in our tracks. Our eyes and our ears should sort of stumble just a little bit as they hit that word, 11. Let me just back up one chapter in Matthew, chapter 7, verse 3 through 5. When Judas, his betrayer, saw that Jesus was condemned, he repented and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders. He said, I have sinned by betraying innocent blood. But they said, what is that to us? See to it yourself. And then throwing down the pieces of silver in the temple, he departed, and he went and hanged himself. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee. Not 12. 11. You see, Judas was a betrayer. Yes, part of losing Jesus was the direct fault of Judas. But he was one of them. Or at least he had been. There are those who even say he was nothing but a pawn in the story, a playing piece. He had no choice. This was his role to play. And in the end, he repented. I have sinned by betraying innocent blood. The disciples didn't always get what Jesus was trying to teach them, which sometimes led Jesus to wishing that people would turn on their ears. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. But in this case, forgiving someone who has repented, forgiving one of their own, I suspect that they listened to Jesus on this one and forgave Judas. Even though he was dead now, they had to have felt a noticeable absence in their midst. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee. When the disciples went to Galilee, they were incomplete. They were broken. They were mourning. Everything they had given the last few years had to have seemed to have been a bit of a waste of time at this point. Jesus was gone, and one of their very own was dead. You see, for me, that changes everything about how they might react to what happens next. You see, they were going to Galilee to meet the risen Christ. Now, knowing how heartbroken they were at this point, knowing how broken they had to have felt, one could assume, and I do, that they themselves assumed that they would receive some comfort from the great shepherd. As confused and broken and hurting as they were, the thought of that had to bring them a little peace, a little hope. And then Jesus speaks. And it's not words of comfort. He does not seem to be helping them make sense of all of this. Instead, he says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Their group was broken, both in numbers and in their hearts. And Jesus wants to send them out into the world. I have to imagine that felt a little bit insensitive, if not impossible, at the time. Daniel Hans is a Presbyterian minister in the United States, and in 1986, he and his wife, Beth, lost their 3-year-old daughter, Laura, to cancer. They watched in agony as their little girl faced hospitalizations and 4 separate operations in the last 9 months of her life. Their hearts obviously broke as they watched Laura pass away, and they struggled to make any sense of what had happened. A year later, he released a book containing some of the sermons he preached throughout his daughter's battle with cancer and in the period immediately following her death. And one of those sermons was titled, Caution, Your God is Too Big. Now, in it, Hans relates how he once surveyed the congregation, asking them about their own disappointments in God. He asked them to share things that they had hoped God would do, but God didn't. And people described times that they had prayed for the life of a newborn child only to see it pass away. The hope that God would protect his people from violence only to hear of a woman being stabbed on the way to church. Prayed for rain for the famine in Africa only to see starvation continue. To these disappointments, Hans now added his own. He had hoped that God would heal his baby girl. But her condition only grew worse. Hans suggests that disappointments like these are just the stuff of life, and that if we read the scriptures, we'll discover that alongside of the stories of miracles and amazing feats by God, we hear story after story of disappointment with God, of times that God appears to be silent and inactive. And he suggests that sometimes we remember only the miracle stories, and so we develop too big of a view of God. Not that we can have too big of a view of God's love and grace, but that we can have too big of a view of God's participation directly in this life. God's action in our world is not always to perform miracles. More often than not, God's action in this world is to walk through our suffering with us. The 11 disciples went to Galilee. They hurt, and they were broken, and they had hoped to be put back together. It wouldn't be surprising if they had spent a lot of time praying for healing as well. And indeed, they were given, instead of healing, they were giving marching orders to go and make disciples of all nations. And there is a lesson. There is a lesson to be learned in that. And I'd like to start at our look at that lesson that can be learned with a short poem that became important to one of the most impressive people in American history who gets mentioned far too little. His name was Roy Campanella. He was one of the first African Americans to play in Major League Baseball. And he had a distinguished career with the Brooklyn Dodgers. Most valuable player was awarded to him many times, and he was even in the 1955 championship with that team. But in January of 1958, his career was cut short after a car crash left him as a quadriplegic. And after he was injured, he actually spent a lot of time at the Institute for Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation in New York City. And one day, he stopped to read this golden plaque that was on the wall. And for someone who had been blessed with such athletic gifts, it all resonated with him deeply. This is what it said. I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn to humbly obey. I asked for health that I might do great things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of others. I was given weakness that I might feel the need for God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life, and I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing I asked for but everything that I'd hoped. Almost despite myself, my unanswered prayers were answered. I am among men most richly blessed. Now, here again, we must be careful to not make God too big when it comes to all of these, some of these certain things. But we must also stop limiting what God can do with things that seem, well, broken. The 11 disciples with Galilee. They were not whole. They were mourning. They were seemingly broken. And Jesus sends them into the world to share the good news. Them. Not only that, Jesus tells them to teach what he has commanded and that he will be with them. Teach what he's commanded and that he'll be with them. And this, in my mind, is where the whole thing gets, well, quite beautiful. What did he command them? What did Jesus teach them was the most important commandment? To love God. To love one another. They, these seemingly broken vessels, are to go into the world and teach the world to love God. To love one another. He also says he'll be with them always. And how did Jesus tell the disciples they will see him? Whenever you do it unto one of the least of these, so too you do it unto me. In the least of these, we will see and serve Christ. In those who we sometimes see as broken to the world. So Christ sent these seemingly broken vessels into the world to teach the world to love God, to love one another. My mind, that is quite beautiful. Japanese have a long tradition of repairing broken ceramic pots and bowls with a resin, a powder that's powdered with gold or sometimes platinum. The process is called kintsugi. The result is actually rather quite stunning. Rather than repairing the bowl but trying to hide the perceived brokenness or flaws, the flaws are actually highlighted with this gold or platinum and turned into something even more beautiful. It's sort of a visual representation of the Japanese philosophy of wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi is basically an embracing of the flawed. It recognizes the value and the difficult beauty of imperfections and flaws. It might look like kintsugi on a broken pot, or a father who gives encouragement through stories of his lost daughter, or a former baseball player who's quadriplegic but feels richly blessed. Or it might look like 11 disciples going out into the world to share love. In the midst of their own feeling of brokenness, to experience Christ in the faces of those who may also feel broken. And that's what Jesus spent his life trying to teach us all to do. That is what he asked these disciples to go to the ends of the earth sharing. Love in the midst of feeling broken. And the beauty that can be found in it as we find God with us in the most difficult spaces and difficult places in life. Wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi looks like you and me with all of our faults, with all of our personality quirks, with all of our disagreements, choosing to love each other. Not in spite of those things, but because of those things. And that is how we spread love into the ends of the earth. And that is how Christ is always with us.